What is up, everybody? Adrian M. Gibson here. What you're about to hear is the audio version of a live author panel recorded during TBRCon 2024, the latest edition of FanFiatic's all-virtual annual science fiction, fantasy, and horror convention, which streamed live between January 21st and January 28th, 2024. FanFiatic and TBRCon had the pleasure of hosting 25 amazing author panels, and we're so happy to be able to provide the audio for you for free here on the podcast feed. So, sit back, relax, and enjoy this fantastic TBRCon 2024 author panel. Welcome to another author panel here on day four of TBRCon 2024. Thank you all so much for tuning in. I'm Adrian M. Gibson, co-host of the SF Fanatics podcast and author of my upcoming fungal punk murder mystery debut novel, Mushroom Blues, which is out on March 19th. Speaking of debuts, this panel is all about the debut author experience, and I'm joined by a fantastic panel of guest authors, all of whom have published their debut novels. And so I'll go through each of you one by one, and you can give a quick introduction. We'll just go around, starting with Sunyi.
Hi, I'm Sunyi Dean. I'm the multi-award losing author of The Book Eaters. People keep changing that on my bio, which really annoys me. They keep changing it to award nominated, but let's focus on the award losing.
It's all about debuts.
I'm very slow. So I've had my debut out and I don't have anything else out at the moment. And I co-hosted for my sins the Publishing Rodeo podcast with Scott Drakeford, who's probably next in this queue.
Scott, take it away.
We decided to podcast instead of write any more books. I'm Scott Drakeford, author of Rise of the Mages. Right there. Also a co-host of Publishing Rodeo. And I'll just try to say the least amount possible today, probably, because y'all got 30, 40 hours of our debut experience already.
We want more. We're greedy.
All right. Yeah. Sounds good.
Awesome. And Caden?
I'm Caden Love, author of Elegy of a Fragment. Oh, right there. Elegy of a Fragmented Vineyard, which came out today. And it's my first book, available on Amazon. And I don't have a podcast, unlike the three above me.
Loser.
That's me, I know.
you can come on SFFatic sometime.
Oh, I'm so down, you know that.
I know you are, I know. And Emma?
Hi, I'm Emma Miyako Canton. I've actually got two books under my belt, and they've been separate, fascinating debut experiences. Yes. Because technically, my first book was a Star Wars book. I got hired to write Star Wars Ronin, but that was shortly after having actually sold my original book. But that came out after. That was The Archive Undying, which came out last year. I also don't have podcasts, but I've been on SFF Addicts and I am an avid fan of Publishing Rodeo. So there we go.
And I love that you have two debuts, because that's why I invited you. Cause I was Star Wars kind of counts as its own thing. And I know a bit about your publishing history. So it's
very different.
Also, I want to throw this up there. Do you want to be called Dr. Love, Caden, for the rest of this podcast?
Yeah, why not? Cool. If you read my book, there is a little bit of medical stuff there. I'm not a doctor by any means, but
all right, Bo, you got your wish, Dr. Love. And we'll finish off with Chelsea. How are you?
Hi, everyone. Great to be here. I'm Chelsea Abdullah. I also do not have a podcast. I have a single book called The Stardust Thief, which is an Arab-inspired epic fantasy, sort of inspired by the versions of the 1001 Nights tales that I grew up with. Follows a merchant, a prince, a djinn, and a thief on their quest to find a mythical magic lamp. I am currently working on the sequel. I am always working on the sequel. I am very tired, but such is the life of an author.
And that's The Ashfire King, right? Or is that's the confirmed title?
Yes, that is the confirmed title.
Nice. All right, well, I'm very excited to talk to everyone, because I'm a soon-to-be debut author, and I know all of you and have talked to you a little bit about your personal experiences, but I think it's really vital for authors who are aspiring and on the path, whether it's traditional or self-publishing, to kind of get an idea of like what they might be in for. But to get things started, I want to ask all of you a bit of a broad question, and then we can kind of get into more specifics. But Caden, we'll start with you since it's your debut day, Dr. Love. How has your debut experience from today left you feeling overall? Like, are you happy and satisfied? And are you hopeful about entering into this wonderful SFF industry that we call home?
Yeah, so I mean, it wasn't really overwhelming. You go months back and it's like, you look forward to this day so much, but it just kind of feels like a normal day besides all the random notifications that I keep getting spammed with. Because what I was really excited for was the initial reactions from reviewers, which I received, you know, in the past few weeks due to ARC reviewers going over it. So today's cool to see it going out into the public, but it, like, it's even less exciting than what's going to happen in the coming weeks when people actually finish it. And it is really cool to see that now I have kind of some people that are following my story and my progression. And it makes, I feel so much more inspired to continue to write more, but at the same time, intimidated, because it's like before I was just writing a story, hoping something good would happen. And now it's like, okay, are people going to like what I do with these characters? And at the same time, I have all these other random book ideas coming to my head. So it's like, do I go and give everything to this book, or should I work kind of on a different one? And so it gives me a lot of excitement, but now it's like I have to go and completely juggle all the logistics and the work side of it, which isn't a bad thing. You know, it's a part of the job, but it's been exciting to say the least.
Now you're out in the public eye, man.
Yeah, it's exactly. I'm being watched. I can be canceled. Who knows?
Dr. Love's out there ready to be canceled. Love it, man. And Soon-Yi, what about you?
Yeah, I hear you on, you kind of, especially in trad, when the lead time is so long that I think literally by the time you're able to tell anyone that you even have a book coming out, it's been like months, and you may or may not have had a contract yet. And by the time it actually does come out, it's sort of old news emotionally. So that said, obviously, I think, you know, people who are familiar with me and my story, the book deal itself was a very life-changing event. It was kind of life-changing money. It kind of altered the course of what I'm doing and where I'm going, and for that I've been very grateful.
Yeah, and I highly recommend everyone check out I think it's episode 1 of Publishing Rodeo, where you and Scott kind of talk about your debut experiences and the kind of emotions that you went through there. But Scott, do you wanna give us your take as well in terms of if it left you feeling happy, satisfied, or hopeful in the future in this industry? Dude, you have such a menacing laugh sometimes. I fucking love it.
I'd call it a learning experience, right? Tons of good came out of it. Met Soon-Yi, a whole bunch of other very cool people. And leveled up as an author. A lot of good things came out of it. But my view of publishing, both in terms of the trad industry and just putting a book out into the world, was very different before I was published. And even different on debut day versus now, right? I'm going to go with neutral for now. I am neutral on having published.
TBD. Scott's TBD.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, I love it. I still love writing. I'm like Chelsea. I'm also finishing up my sequel to my debut. Absolutely loving it. I have, I'm really excited for plans in the future, but it is a lot of work, and there are a lot of pitfalls that you just don't know are there until you followed them.
Can I just say really quick, I'm glad you both are working on your sequels because it feels like everyone else has put out three books since we had a book out.
Well, Chelsea, what about you? What has your experience as a debut author left you feeling?
Yeah, mixed feelings. Because I think, you know, sort of like what Kaden was saying, what we all have said, actually, there's this very big lead up. There's this sort of like buzzy feeling, you know, you're like, oh, it's coming, like my book is soon going to be out in the world. And then for me, there was this very big moment of decompression or months of decompression where, you know, I just kind of was left feeling deflated. And it had nothing to do with the reception of the book. Like I am very, very lucky to have received, you know, all of the attention my book has received. And I've been extremely grateful for all the support and the kind words of readers. But I think because you're sort of building yourself up for this moment. So then when it finally hits, regardless of whether it's everything that you dreamed of or overwhelming or underwhelming, you know, it is a moment and then it passes. And then this industry is always about moving to the next big thing, which is, you know, just the case with creative industries in general. Like, oh, this cool thing is out, you know, what's up next? And so I think for me, I had a wonderful debut experience. Like I said, I'm very grateful for all the things that happened for the Stardust Thief. But I was also very tired. by the time I got to debut week, and this is something that people had told me, they said, make sure to carve out a lot of personal time for yourself. Mm-hmm. Make sure, you know, to not measure your self-worth that week, especially that initial, I think, debut week when your work is first out in the world. It is both the most exciting and most nerve-wracking thing to know that the book is available to all these people, and people are, you know, taking a chance on your work and finally, you know, getting to read your work. But there's also just a lot of emotions. And so I think, you know, I think those emotions were all wonderful. Well, some more than others. But it was also very much a cyclone of emotions. So I think, and for me, I kind of had that decompression, I think, even before debut. You know, I at some point was like, I can't wait for my book to be out so I don't, you know, so I don't have to worry about promoting it enough or not promoting it enough, or, you know, all those things that I think we're really, really stressed out about during debut week. So I kind of hit that mental wall right before and was juggling excitement and nerves for the days leading up to the debut. But looking back on the experience, it was fantastic. Like I keep saying, I got really lucky with the Stardust Thief. I'm extremely, you know, excited for and very happy for the reception that it's received. And I'm really glad that people are still excited for book two. because I, you know, I think for the longest time, because I am a slower writer and because this industry kind of tricks people into thinking like it's one year schedule. Right. Or like that is the ideal. And some writers can write that quickly. I wish I was one of them. But I think after debut, that was also something that was very much on my mind is, you know, this second book is going a lot slower. Like, how am I supposed to amp up my speed? How can I do that while making sure that it's still quality, while making sure that like I still keep my process? So suffice it to say, there was a lot of figuring out that kind of stuff, I think, as well during debut week, like living in the moment, but then also thinking about the future, and trying to live in the moment and not think about the future. But it's hard. It's hard to live completely in that week, I think, during debut.
Right. And you did a lot of foreshadowing there. We're going to touch on a lot of stuff that emotions and
so many
sequels, all this kind of stuff, just this roller coaster of emotions like Ron Burgundy or whatever. But Emma, I'll pass it off to you if you want to give us a sense of how both the Star Wars debut and your traditional, I would say, like, well, can we call it like your post Star Wars debut?
My technical, or there was my like debut book, but then my original debut was the way that it was described.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I have a case study, essentially, of like two different contrasting experiences where, and there's also the fact that I, as a human being, I tend to shy from really intense emotions. So I'll like do whatever I can to cushion that self for me. So in both cases, I was really trying to intellectualize the experience of like the debut moment and to keep it sort of at a remove from myself. And we can talk about the degree to which I was successful at that, because I think possibly, like, I'm the only one who has to suffer for this, so it's okay. But like, I feel positive emotions very, very slowly. And mm-hmm. over time, I don't get like those intense bursts of joy. They just sort of like trickle in over time. But then again, the most intense experiences I had about writing a Star Wars book were like intermittently in my car. In the months while I was writing it, I would just have these moments of euphoria of like, you're writing a Star Wars book with Japanese folklore. That's incredible. Mm-hmm. but like when debut actually came around, it was just sort of fun. I had a nice day. I don't really like social media. I don't trust it. but I had a fun day and I couldn't really write that day because it was just sort of like fun, giggly, whatever. But then... And it also like really wasn't about me in a lot of ways, because when you're writing for a franchise that big, it's so much more about the thing itself. And like you are kind of like this afterthought. And mm-hmm. I think that might have been a little bit because it came out during the pandemic, because when I did later on get to go to Comic-Con last year as part of like my original stuff, there was a moment where I dropped by the Star Wars booth to like chat with my editor. And he was like, Star Wars fans nearby, look, it's an author. And I'm like... Thank you. Hi. Bye. I have to run. I can't deal with this. But versus for the original debut, like I was also extremely fortunate in a way that was very shocking to me, because I had thought I'm writing a really weird little niche book about giant robots and there's not really a giant robots market in the field I'm trying to write in. But my editor really like clicked with it. So he threw his weight behind it, and I got to do all these things that I had never imagined were on the plate for me. But it was still like, I don't know, Chelsea's words about like, there's this intense moment and then the aftermath. Oh man, I'm just crawling out of the aftermath. I want to talk about emotions, because the experience for me was like, oh, this is so nice. And then like 6 months of I'm dying. And it was partly like health stuff, but the health stuff was probably partly caused by all that. So mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm ready to talk about it. People were very kind to me. It was really intense. There are a lot of things I simply wouldn't recommend about the experience, but because overall I have a positive view of it, I would just be like, take what we say about it very seriously when it comes to your own experiences, and be really aggressive about building cushions for yourself.
This is going to be a therapy session for a lot of this.
Man, I almost felt
good thing we have Dr. Love in the building to lead this therapy session.
I seriously had to ask myself whether I was up for doing this, but then when I realized, like, oh no, everybody here is going to be like, I mean, it's cool, but it's rough. I was like, oh no, it'll be cathartic. It's fine.
Let's just fucking vent, man. Let's do this. All right. Well, we're going to lead into, I'm going to start with Scott, unpacking sort of some specifics about your pre-launch experience and how that kind of led into the launch experience. Do you want to say what form your book was published in, like traditional self-pub, and then what you were expecting leading up to the launch versus how it played out, and how your actual launch compared to like your expectations and hopes and fears? That laugh.
Every one of these questions is so loaded. Like,
I know, but that's why we're here.
They would take a very long time to answer fully. But what I will say is, I guess you asked about format, right? So I signed a deal with Tor in 2017. I think I turned in the final version of book one in 2018. Various things happened. They wanted to release all the books together, but not only am I a slow writer, I had a very demanding job at the time and had a young child, et cetera. So that didn't happen, and the pandemic hit and various things pushed that out all the way to 2022. So that was fun in and of itself. But you know, it was a small deal. I didn't really count on it being much in terms of, you know, replacing any financial income, that kind of thing. I signed on for a trilogy of trade paperback, and right before launch they changed it to hardcover. They printed 9,700, I think was the number, hardcovers of my book. And so right before launch, and when I say right before, I mean like 6 months before.
in traditional publishing timeframes.
Yeah, yeah. And again, my book's been done for quite a while at this point. But those things start happening, and I'm like, okay. Well, for one thing, I didn't have a ton of info on whether that was good or bad. But as best I could tell, you know, changing to hardcover was a good thing because, you know, theoretically they thought that it was worth printing in that format and then going to the traditional trade paperback a year later. 9,700 is a pretty solid print run for an unknown debut. And so I had all that going on, but then at the same time, you know, they let me know that they weren't printing any ARCs, and I kept asking about, okay, what are we do? Like, what should I be doing for marketing and awareness? You know, like, I'm just some guy that wrote a nerd book. What do we do about it? And like, and what are you doing? You know, so I wanted to get involved. I wanted to do as much as I could, and I just didn't get a lot of info. So I spun my wheels, honestly, for a very long time. It was pretty tough debuting, still not really knowing what was going to happen, what variables were going to affect success or not. And so I turned my attention to other things while still obviously finishing up book two and still doing what I could with book one. But the mental health struggle, because of how involved we are with our work and the unknowns of launching it into a somewhat uncaring marketplace, and then on top of that not having any clue what's going on, not having much of a clue what's going on with your book behind the scenes with, you know, the person or the company you've licensed the rights to, it's a struggle. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, does that answer your question? What else do you want to know?
Yeah. I mean, it's like your hopes were kind of ambiguous because everything that you were trying to get in terms of information from the publisher and all that was also kind of ambiguous. So
I would guess that very few of us write a book and then try to get it published without some secret hope that you're going to be one of the next big authors, right? Mm-hmm. I think anybody who says that they don't have that hope is lying, or they are just a fundamentally different human from me. I do not understand that at all.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. Like, even in self-pub, Dr. Love, I'm going to pass it off to you. Like, I, you know, even in self-publishing, it's kind of like, you hope I'm going to be the next, like, Ryan Cahill or
exactly,
or
that's
whoever.
The same name I was thinking of.
So, love you, Ryan. You fucking hardworking son of a gun. But what has it been like for you, Caden, in terms of going the self-pub route and then, you know, choosing the formats that you want to release it in, doing Kickstarter and that kind of stuff, and how all of that has played into your preconceived hopes and expectations and fears, and how you see all of that kind of trickling out in the lead up to today, launch day.
Yeah. So I think one of the initially really cool things about self-pub authors and all authors, but a lot of the self-pub authors are so easy to get in touch with. Like I remember I loved Gunmetal Gods, so I reached out to Zami Akhtar, and this was before I was even like, I had my name out there that I was writing a book, and just asked him for his advice. Super cool guy. And I've had that great experience with a lot of authors, and just seeing how reachable this world is gives me some hope. But at the same time, you always have that, you know, I don't know if I would say I've experienced imposter syndrome, but it's just the like, am I ever going to be as good as any of these authors, or can I be? And especially like my book had a good amount of hype leading up to it on Twitter and certain communities. And it was really cool and reassuring. But at the same time, I always had that question, okay, these people haven't read my book. They haven't read anything that I've written. What if they get it and hate it? And I think that that is one of the hard things about writing in general. I mean, I haven't had to deal with a company. The only people I really dealt with was myself, early readers, and, you know, my editor. And so when I first started and I had some family and friends that said, okay, this is like really good. And it's like, oh yeah, your family, friends, you know, what does it say? And I remember I finished the first draft of LG in 9 months. And I went to a family friend of mine that he's a full-time self-pub author. And I just sat down with him and like showed him my book. And I'm like, okay, where do I go from here? And I remember him saying, okay, you need to get a critique group, go through it. And in about a year, then you can look at editing. And like, just my world is kind of shattered. And that's what writing is. You have these like, oh, I am writing the next best thing to like, this book's never going to happen. This is garbage. And, you know, I go through and I get that and I feel pretty good and set. I have like, my book started off at 220K words, finished at 120K. You know, I took a lot out of it. And by the time I got it to my editor, she really helped me chop it down, but I had to take another step back. And I think it's a lot of, you know, later books, I will know what I did wrong. And I have a new author mindset. This was such a learning experience to know how to write and what is publishable. Mm-hmm. Because the book that I gave her initially was garbage. Like I can see so many people DNFing it, so many people like reading it and they're like, this is Malazan, but it doesn't make sense at all. Like there isn't even spark
and
stuff.
I would argue for a lot of people, they think Malazan is already confusing or heady enough.
So. Yeah, like that's my point. I knew that there's going to be some confusing stuff, but the problem was that I had heavy stuff that I didn't do a good job of explaining. I had a lot of sentences that didn't make sense. And I did my cover reveal back in like summer of last year. I had it planned out that I was going to publish in October or November. And I had a good following there and I had a lot of people hyped on it, but I had to go and my author's like, okay, we need to take a step back. We need to do another cleanse of this,
yeah.
Which in that moment, you know, I had that kind of like life shattering. You're shaking like, oh, like, where do I go from here? Is it even worth going? And in the end, it feels so nice. And I think it's just, it was a ride of disappointments and excitement, and that'll never end. You know, I'll always have the people that'll read it and go and give it 5 stars and love it. You'll have the people that do not finish it. And then there's people that give it enough and they appreciate it. And I mean, even now that's something I'm having to deal with. I have people that read it and I just recognize that it's not for them. There's mistakes that I've made, but it's never going to be perfect and no book ever is. And I think that is a lot of the author experience, is learning to accept that you're going to have highs and lows of everything. You know, right now I'm on the high of my debut day. In a couple of days, I'm probably going to have some bad reviews that are going to bring me down, but there'll always be, you know, some light that I'll get.
Yeah, I agree. And it's like, whether you're trad or self-pub, I think it's more just a matter of like the speed at which things happen, but like, that self-doubt creeps in all the fucking time, you know, and just thinking like whatever I wrote today is just like a dumpster fire. And the hope is that tomorrow you can douse that dumpster fire and, you know, figure out what the hell to do with it, and then just kind of keep moving on. And some days you have, you know, amazing writing sessions. Some days is just terrible, but like, I don't know. I think that's part of the, like you said, the learning experience of being an author in general. And it's tricky. Chelsea, I want to toss it to you, because it's like that period when you are, you know, on your own, in your own bubble, and then this book is in somebody else's hands. And then you get more opinions about it. And it's like people want to change certain things, and you get really protective of your little creative baby. And then just the lead up towards this thing going out to the broader public and whoever might read it, or whoever hates it, or whoever loves it. So how was it for you, Chelsea, in terms of your sort of pre-launch experience leading into launch and all of the emotions and expectations and hopes and fears that kind of went through your mind?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I want to start off by seconding that you are your own worst enemy very often. For me, interestingly, I actually did not feel that way very often until I sort of entered the publishing sphere. So I've been writing for a long time. I've been writing really long drafts for a very long time. That's sort of my my thing as a writer is my
that's your MO.
I wish I was not like this, but I am.
Do you want to tell everyone the length of some of these unfinished projects?
Yeah. So the the longest thing I have ever written, and this will never see the light of day, most certainly, is 770,000 words. Nobody wants to read that. But then,
what?
Are you fucking with me? How?
Why?
I'm not, this isn't like, no way. It's just like, how?
It wasn't book shaped. That's the thing, right?
No, but you maintain momentum for that long, which is what surprised me the most.
Well, and that project in particular, I think took me 2 years to write. And by the time I got to the end of it, I'm like, why did I do this to myself? Why am I still working on it? But at that point I had been so invested. For me, I'm a very character invested writer. So I actually go into every single project with curiosity about the characters. That's kind of why I write. I have, you know, sort of these scenes in my head, and I have these characters. And I want to know more about them. So I'm obviously a pantser, and I'm kind of discovering the characters. yes, I write. Like I said, nobody wants to read 770,000 words. I did have one alpha reader who, bless her heart, read the entire thing. And I don't know how, but she read it and she enjoyed it. So, but I will never write something that long again. I wrote these long drafts for the longest time because I really just wanted to go into these stories with a love of these characters. I didn't really think about publishing for a very long time. Like, it was sort of a far off dream for me. But you know, first and foremost, my main concern was nobody wants to read things that are this long. So I just kind of wrote to have fun. I completed 3 manuscripts and then had many other incomplete ones that just were, you know, just overwhelmed me. So I didn't finish them. So this was a while back, many years ago. But I always came at and still come at projects from a really personal place. So when I wrote The Stardust Thief, this book, like I said earlier, comes from a very personal place for me. I wrote it because I was nostalgic for home. I was born and raised in Kuwait. And so, you know, I was raised with those stories over there. And then during my undergrad years, I really wanted to write something that was kind of an homage to that culture and to the stories that I had grown up with. As they say, distance makes the heart grow fonder. So this was kind of my love letter to all of that. And I sat on it for years and years. Just like I am a slow burn writer, I'm also a slow burn. My conceptualization process is also very slow burn. I'll sit on projects for like 3 or 4 years before I'm ready to write them. So just in general, you know, again, they're with me for a very long time. And when I finished The Stardust Thief, it was, my first draft was 330,000 words, which is still very long, still very long, but it was not 700,000 words.
Just half think, that, whatever. Or not, like a little bit less than half, like 40%, whatever.
Well, and you can probably tell this about me, I am the kind of writer who needs to work through everything in my writing on the page. And so that's part of the reason my drafts are so long, is I'm thinking through every single bit of world building. I'm trying out all these different tangents with my characters. And then it, you know, just gets longer and longer and longer. So it's not quite book shaped when I'm writing that first draft. But so I finished the first draft of Stardust. And I feel like something in me at that point had shifted as a writer. I felt finally at that point that maybe I had enough experience under my belt to try editing. So then I attempted to edit. I rolled up my sleeves. I cut, I don't know how many words. My second draft was 145,000 words. So I chopped it in more than, yeah, I cut like 60% of that book, which just goes to show you how much of it was extraneous and written just for me. But I did that. And then I think at that point, I started realizing, you know, maybe this is something that other people would like to read. So it was really only at that point, once I had edited and it started to look like a book, that I thought about maybe pursuing traditional publication. But I did not have, I don't want to say hopes going into this, because I did. I clearly wanted it to be picked up. But I think because I had written this story from such a personal place, it kind of stemmed from that personal place. And then every single thing that happened to me along the way was a very pleasant surprise. And I queried, this was the first book that I queried, but I worked on it for three and a half years before I queried it, because it needed a lot of work. I thought to myself, how cool would it be to get an agent? And then I got an agent. I was like, wow, that's amazing. It would be really amazing to get a publisher for this, but who knows if that will happen. And then I signed with Orbit, and that was a dream come true. And so every part of the process, I think in the lead up, kind of felt that way to me. The more I went along, the longer I went along, you know, you always have these shifting goalposts. So I think initially, sort of the dream had been, well, you know, publishing a book is the dream. And then finding people who love the book is the next dream. But then like, as you sort of like enter the industry and start to realize, expectations and what other people think is valuable in this industry, I think a lot of that tends to kind of fall on you. So, you know, a lot of things that I had never thought about, you know, lists and getting certain editions, like all of these different things didn't really occur to me until I was sort of on the playing field, or not playing field, but, you know, sort of in this sphere with everyone. And then I realized, oh, these are things that are actually possible. Right. It would be really cool to have them. So I think a lot of the lead up experience was like that to me. It was a lot of surprises. You know, at a certain point, I think the closer you get to debut, the more you feel that external pressure, and sometimes well-meaning pressure from people who are like, oh, you're going to do this and this, you're going to be a bestseller. I can't, you know, and then so they sort of start projecting those things onto you, and you can't help but project them or internalize them onto yourself. And so I think the closer I got to debut, the more those expectations really started to, you know, fall down on me. Because up until that point, it had been very personal. And then, you know, when you put a book out into the world, when you start to see it perceived as a product, which is still something that I struggle with, the fact that people pick this book up off a shelf and then, you know, either think it's worth the price or not worth the price, is like such a bizarre concept to me. It's extremely flattering, but also just wild, because this is this thing that's so personal to me and means so much to me. So to think of it in that context is just wild.
Yeah, to be like my dream project and this thing that I poured my heart into. You have to like monetize it and put it out into this, like Scott said, this very unforgiving marketplace. And you have no idea how it's going to fare.
Right.
Sales wise, review wise, all that kind of stuff is just so.
Exactly.
It's so up in the air. And deep down, you're like, what about what I want? You know, like everyone else is pouring expectations on you. Be like, what about me?
Yeah. Well, and I think like, yeah, I mean, I was talking earlier about like debut, you know, sort of debut week being a whirlwind of experiences and emotions. And so often I had to stop and anchor myself and say, you know, what was it that you wanted from this experience?
Right.
What are the things that you are excited about as an author? And just kind of like separating myself from those expectations. And from that, just sort of like general buzz and publicity. And just kind of centering myself amidst all of that. So the further along I got in the process, the more I had to remind myself to do that. And then even directly after debut, I'd say that was and still is something that I, you know, am still working on, is like, you know, finding a way to carve out that personal space with a project, while also remembering this is a thing that I am on contract for and people are expecting it and it will be on shelves. So kind of balancing those two perspectives.
Like the creativity and the fact that this is also a job.
Yes. Kind of thing. Very much. Yeah.
Yeah. And Sanjeev, what about you? Cause you said like getting the book deal from Tor was like a life-changing thing for you. So I imagine that in and of itself was very emotionally powerful, but at the same time, like how was it for you to go into pre-launch and then launch your debut on top of everything that you'd experienced?
Yeah, so I think if I could characterize my life in a word, it would probably be failure. I think I have not succeeded at most of the things that I have attempted in my life. And in addition to that, most of my friends, you know, they're mid-list and they're a couple of years ahead of me. So I had a really good idea of what publishing looked like, and I'd watched one of my friends, you know, get picked up by Orbit and go through that kind of like excitement. The book comes out, it's undersupported, things go wrong. You know, the publisher kind of withdraws, and I'd seen what publishing could look like when it pivots away from you in trad. So I kind of went into it expecting failure, expecting the worst, and just assuming, you know, whatever I can get from it is fine. It was definitely a life-changing experience. I think I've talked about it some of the podcasts, but basically at the time when I got my book deal, I separated from my partner for a few months, and I was living in this flat that had no hot water, no stove, no fridge, no washing machine. And in the UK, our heating comes from our hot water. So if you don't have hot water, you don't have heating. And I was really stressed about that. It was okay in summer, but it's getting towards winter. And basically the book deal kind of came through in like August, and they paid me in October, and I moved in November into a house that had heating, and I was fucking thrilled. because then that means I don't have to bathe the kids at like the gym. It was a huge difference. I think it changed what I thought could be possible in my life, I guess. And debut experience, I think it's really weird, because even though I valued it and I really wanted to succeed, I worked out quite early on that there's very little I could do that would make a difference. And I think, you know, that's something that Scott and I talk about a lot in our conversations, is, you know, what you can actually do. And I think one of the things I struggle to convey to people is that if a publisher isn't supporting a book, it's not just that there's a gap that they're not filling. It's like it's almost like they're a barrier, if that makes sense, you know, because there's certain things you don't have, certain resources open to you that are open to self-pub authors. So if a publisher isn't pulling its weight, it is a weight. And basically I did get the support. I was very lucky in that sense. I got good support from Tor, I got good support from Harper. I knew that it was good because I could see what some of my friends were not getting at those publishers. And I was very aware that not everyone has that good experience and what it's like on the other side of the fence. But yeah, I kind of went through debut year in this continual sense of gratitude. And you still worry that your book won't succeed. It does happen. The best will in the world, things can go wrong. You know, there were books a couple of years before me that had great support from their publishers, and they basically launched straight into COVID and just did not do well. And that was really, really hard, I think, for those authors and, you know, their editors that wanted to see them succeed. Sorry, I don't know if that really answered your question, but it's a bit all over the place.
No, it did. Because it's like, from my perspective, it's a very personal kind of attachment to the contract that you received and the way that your book was supported and all that. And it was, literally like no heating and winter approaching, like fucking Game of Thrones, like winter is coming at you and you're like, when am I going to get this money? And the way that just kind of swept into, you know, Tor supporting you and, you know, even like, launch and post-launch, I think like the book sold really well, like Sunday Times bestseller or something like that.
Well, I think take the Sunday Times bestseller stuff with a grain of salt. I feel like in the UK that, you know, it's not nothing. It is an achievement, but it's also like our market is so dominated by crates that kind of, you know, if someone doesn't get onto the Sunday Times list, it's not because their book sucks. It's probably just they didn't get into a crate. And if you get onto the Sunday Times list without a crate, you've just, I don't know what's going on. You're amazing. Your book's magic. Or you're Richard Osmond. But what I'm saying is I see my book success as being separate from anything that I've done. Like my job was to write it, and I don't feel I can take credit for its success because I definitely didn't do jack shit for marketing, really. I probably should have done more. I didn't do a launch party or anything. I do very few events, mostly because my publicist left and I don't know what the hell is going on at Harper these days. So, I don't do nearly enough. I should do more, but it didn't seem to matter too much in the end. And I think that's really how I would sum up Trad is like, if the right people are doing the right things, your book has a chance. And if they're not, your efforts are largely negligible a lot of times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which Emma, I'm really curious to get your perspectives, because it's like, how was it? Because what Sunny is just talking about in terms of like the support that you get from the publisher, when you have, I think the Star Wars franchise is published through Del Rey, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you have the support of Del Rey, but then you also have the monumental support of the Star Wars and franchise and LucasArts.
What I would say is if you write a Star Wars book, everybody can be asleep at the wheel and it can still like hit a bestseller list. Absolutely 100%. It's just the way it works. So it's so interesting hearing everyone talk about this because like, I think I instinctively kind of like have a very cynical approach to my work and its chances. So when things go well, I'm always pleasantly surprised. But when they don't, I'm just like, yeah, that makes sense. So like every single time I was shocked to sell the book. It was a thing that I had written because I had gotten my agent like almost 10 years before and had gone out with a book that got some revise and resubmits, but like that was it. And then life went on, some really dramatic life-changing events occurred and I could no longer work on that book. I couldn't even look at it. I was a different person too entirely. So I wrote another book that was like deeply attached to a lot of those life experiences, especially the experience of my body just holy shitting the bed. And it was like a giant robot book because robots are bodies. And I was like, this is a niche thing. Like Pacific Rim did well, but this is like way more anime and weird than Pacific Rim. And it's a book. So its market is inherently very, very tiny. Add into that it's very Asian and very queer, tinier, tinier, tinier. So when it found a home with not only an imprint that I loved, but an editor who I actually knew about and loved. It was shocking, wild. It's, I think, the thing I think you honestly should hope for more than anything else is that you find an editor who gets you, because that has been what changed everything for this book, because it's inherently a very niche thing, and it's done as well as I think it possibly could have with all those caveats attached to it, because my editor has been behind me every step of the way. And I'm still really banking on that relationship, because I've had a lot of difficulty working on the sequel because it was kind of conceived as a standalone. And I said, sure, I can write a sequel, but now I don't know if that's true. So like, I am technically working on that, but I'm also technically working on something new, and we're kind of seeing what sticks. And I'm just lucky because I have an editor who again looks at my brain and says, that'll do. I like that. And it's sort of like letting me figure out what's going to happen. But the Star Wars book did well because it was a Star Wars book. The mechanism of advertising there is incredible. Mm-hmm. It's an engine of indescribable power that anything that you trad pub cannot hope to match, especially if you're doing genre. It's just something else. It's a juggernaut, like literally.
And even the Star Wars book that you wrote is kind of niche within the framework of Star Wars. But at the same time,
during the pandemic.
Yeah, but at the same time, they had it was like based on the world of one of like the Star Wars Visions.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like this niche thing within Star Wars, and a book based on that niche. And still, it's this fucking juggernaut. Like, it's
it's tiny within the realm of Star Wars. If you get hired to write, like, in the canon, you're fine. Don't do anything. It's okay. And that's good for me, because I don't really like or trust the internet. I'm fascinated by it. I could talk about it all day. But the experience of it, for me, is bad. It's, like, viscerally the panopticon. It's the little demon that crawls inside your body and is sitting on your shoulder. Like, should you have said that? Should you like talk about this part of your life in a funny way and expose yourself to all these people who you actually don't care about, who like you can have fun exchanges with, but they don't have real impact on your life. Anyway, my opinion is you shouldn't do social media stuff if you don't like it, because it's just bad. And I don't really like it, and I try not to do it. And every once in a while I get suckered into doing it. And it's a bad experience for me emotionally, even when it's technically a fun time, because it lives with me afterwards. And in a way where I'm like observing myself and going, I don't know, it turns you into riding shotgun in your own life. And I think it's just so alienating and bad. And it opens the door to so many neuroses that I'm already having trouble controlling, that it's like, this isn't worth it. But again, I think this just goes to Sunyi's point about like, there is actually so little impact that you, the author, have on how well the book does outside of your relationship with the people at the publisher, if you're lucky. And that's it. That's kind of it. Like, write the book and then carve out the space for yourself where you don't have to care about what's happening out there, because it doesn't matter. I've learned a lot about what I write and who it's for. And like, it's essentially for readers in the vein of the reader I am. There are things I don't really care about. Like, I generally don't care about Marvel movies, and people who like Marvel movies look at my work and go, I don't get this. It's like, yeah, that's fine. We're not the same people. But hearing them go, I don't get this, makes me feel a kind of way where it's like, oh, they don't get it. And it's like, I understand why they don't. And I think it's good that they have things that they do get and like, and that it's good that I am writing stuff for the people who don't want to engage with that, who want to engage with something else. But it still hits. It still gets in you. The weird thing is that even when people who are like, oh, this is for me, I love this, this is like 11 out of 10, do it again, I still get neurotic. So I don't know. I don't think there's a way to win. I really am. Right now, I am cutting off as many channels to publishing as I can, so I can just have my like little pen where I live and play D&D with my friends and write books. It's much better over here.
No, but Emma, you're touching on something that I think is really important. And I think everyone has kind of broached the subject a little bit, which is mental health and how that kind of plays into the debut experience. And I'm glad that you also brought up social media, even though I have this like perpetual image of a little demon going inside your body and then onto your shoulder, like he fucking pops out of your skin or something.
It's possessed you, and then sometimes it comes out like, hello.
Okay, so he's like a little shadow monster, just like popping out of your shoulder. Because for Kate and I, it's like with self-publishing, you have to be so engaged with social media. And you're your own marketer. It's like you're taking on all these entrepreneurial roles. And so the marketing that traditional publishing would normally give you, even if they don't give you as much as you'd hoped or shit all in some cases, because it's just, you know, a toss of the coin. But in self-publishing, it's like you got to engage a lot. You sort of immerse yourself in the community and with readers and with reviewers and booktubers and podcasters, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's this kind of constant engagement thing. So Dr. Love, I'm gonna give this one to you first in terms of how you approach mental health and your relationships with readers and your relationship with social media and those kinds of things as a self-pub author, doing Kickstarter and being a debut author all at the same time.
Well, yeah, like you touched on it exactly. We have to be on social media, which I kind of am starting to hate now, but I like it. It is, there are definitely goods and bads. And for the most part, everybody that I've met with on social media, except for the random people that throw out things on TikTok for some reason, has been wonderful. You know, these are a bunch of people that are just trying to support authors trying to do their thing. And, you know, I'll hear friends and family talking to me and like, oh, you know, I deleted Instagram. Like I need a break for it. And it's like, that's great. I can't.
I wish. Yeah.
And it's more so now that like my book's out in the public eye. Now that I've had to turn off my watch from sending me notifications. I've had to put my phone on silent, even though I'll see them, and just set it aside. You know, I try to throughout the day periodically go and do my due diligence for being on Twitter, interacting, just being a part of the community, especially now because I want to keep that momentum for my book going. But you know, like as a kid, especially when you're starting as a writer, I can't wait till people are always talking about my book and stuff like that. And it's like, I see why people want to just crawl into a cave and have no interactions at all, because I don't want all of this. And it's definitely, you have to set your own boundaries. You have to know, okay, here's family time, here's friend time. And it's a lot of that. I think a lot of my breaks have been writing because I've dealt a lot with OCD, and my mind will just like really stick on something. And in a way, I wouldn't say writing has been a cure, but it's been such a help, because rather than just worrying about nonsensical things, I can just be focused on thinking about my book and writing a lot. And, you know, now all the pub things are kind of creeping in, but it's hard. And when, like I said, when I first started, it was really great to just reach out to authors and have them just like come back to you like, wow, these people are so touchable. And then sometimes you can get a little hurt when some of them don't just respond to you. But at the same time, it's like, I don't blame them at all. You know, I'll have people that I'll see their message and it's like, I can't deal with that right now. I'll get to that in like 3 days. And then I'll look and I still have a message sitting there on Twitter. It's like, someone sent me something like a week ago and I haven't got them. It's nothing about who I am. I'm trying to be the friendly person to everyone, but you can't. Like, we are just a single person. And, you know, I have all of these great friends that I've met through this community, but I have to give my attention to my family. My wife needs to like, sometimes just, I'm like, okay, Seema, if you need, just grab my phone and like throw it across the room. You know, you have your time reserved, but sometimes I can just get caught up in a lot of that. And I think it is really helpful, you know, if you have someone close to you to kind of tell you when, okay, you've been really sucked into this. But I guess a lot of that is just trying to set, it's hard to set boundaries, but just a schedule, you know, have time where you're like, okay, here I'm with my family, nothing else. Here I'm writing, nothing else. And, you know, it's difficult when I'm, you know, I'm not a full-time author yet, you know, a man can hope, but I have to juggle that. So a lot of times I feel like my downtime at work, I'll be just on my phone on social media. I bet people think I look like a lazy bum, but it's like I'm doing networking. I'm trying to promote my book. And it is a lot of that. It's the constant struggle of setting boundaries, that there is no perfect way to do it. Sometimes we're better, sometimes we're worse.
Right. Yeah. Well, Ryan agrees. Let me know when you find those boundaries. It's a constant fucking struggle, man. Like, I went through it last year when I directed and organized TBRCon 2023, which is why this year I was like, I'm taking a huge step back. I'm just going to, like, as much as I can, help out, but take a huge step back from things. And that week, I told my wife, I was like, I'm going to be on my phone way too much and you're going to get annoyed. And afterwards, she just like took my phone away. She was like, that was terrible. And please don't do that again. So I was like, yeah, well, now I'm going to self-publish my own books. So ha ha. But I've learned my lesson from doing that. And it's really difficult to set boundaries. And I don't think it's ever perfect. And it's just a constant, just constantly trying to find out, what am I doing today? What do I need to get done? What is like absolute priority? And how can I kind of divide up my time where I'm not sucked in all day long? And it's like, I have my two boys. So it's like, there are times when I'm just like, phone goes away and I'm just going to go outside and play with them and everything else can just fuck off, you know? And you just kind of have to set those rules for yourself. Cause like Emma said, that little demon on your shoulder nagging you, be like, hey, you got a little like message notification on your phone. Why haven't you answered it yet? And it's just like, sometimes it's just not that important, you know, even if for the person who sent it, they might view it as bigger than you receive it. Like you were saying, like these authors that you're reaching out to, your message to them for you is huge, but them replying to you might not have as much significance. And it might also be that way with publishers. You send them an email, be like, can I get this information? And Scott, like you were saying earlier, like, how can I do more for my launch? Like, how can I get involved more? What can I do? And for you, it's like everything. And unfortunately, like publishers are corporations, and how many books are they trying to publish and market and sell, and how do they prioritize things versus how does an individual author prioritize things in their minds? So Sonia, I want to get your takes on this in terms of like just mental health and all this shit and the ways in which we interact with readers and social media and whatnot.
I've left Twitter and it was like shedding a skin.
You're still on Publishing Rodeo.
I am, yeah, but I kind of log in to do notifications sometimes. But it's very, very different where it's like, because it's a personal account, I don't really spend a lot of time on it. And I think I found for me, social media was corrosive, and the more time I spent on it, the less my tolerance was for stupidity. And I remember this post from Scalzi, John Scalzi, ages ago, where he talked about how he first joined Twitter and he was very like, oh yeah, people have different opinions and debate, that's cool. And after like a year or two, he was like, no, fuck you, I'm going to block you all for like looking at me wrong. And you do get to that point where you just, everything gets under your skin and it's so corrosive and it's so damaging.
And how much time do you waste just like blocking people? Like that in and of itself takes time out of your day, you know?
I think I stepped away in the end because I think there's a bigger risk of me losing my rag and yelling at someone on Twitter and making my publisher look bad than there is of me actually helping sales. So Instagram I use because it's very easy to limit interactions on Instagram, and I quite like all the fashion and dice and things that I follow on there. otherwise, yeah, mental health is, I think like everyone else, had loads of anxiety in debut year. I think for me, I feel the precariousness of, I'm fortunate enough to live off writing, but I also know that won't necessarily last forever, especially if I don't finish this fucking book. So it's a whole headspace, I guess. And I don't kind of, you know, if I had a day job, I'd stick to it. But yeah, my biggest thing this year was learning to step back from things that were just stressing me out. And I think a a lot of social media was part of that. So TikTok's gone and Twitter's gone, and that's helped enormously. Blue Sky, there's not much going on there, at least that I can see. So
yeah, I stopped posting there because it's like I don't get very much interaction. So I'm like, why waste time trying to post on another platform that's still fledgling, you know?
Yeah, and I think there's maybe if you're self-pub, it's very different, right? Because like if you post and say, you know, 10 people buy your book because of that post, that's pretty, like, you're going to get a lot more royalties percentage wise. But my royalties are such that, especially now I'm in paperback, it's like every sale is basically like a dollar is how I think of it in my head. So is that really worth my, do you know what I mean? So it's kind of, you're banking on bigger bookstore sales and things, and it just, the return on social media is not great for trad. So yeah.
No, I mean, from the sounds of it, it's like you have no regrets reducing your social media interactions with it, which I think is a good thing, because it's just so much added stress, man. Yeah.
I think I'd be in jail for murder if I hadn't stepped back. You go, Scott.
Scott, what about you, my friend?
Laughing because I can't get off Twitter, because then where will I make fun of Richard?
Is that Richard Swan?
Yeah. I'm going to be honest. I don't know. I can't remember what the question is.
Mental health, social media, keeping it together.
Fuck me. you just have to let go. I mean, your targets change, right? And if you can't change yourself to fit the new landscape of whatever reality shows itself to be, then you're in for a very, very bad time.
Moving goalposts, right, bud?
That's all I got. Yeah, and I mean, it doesn't have to be a bad thing, right? Like, you just have to be able to let go and move on to the next thing, or take advantage of something that works.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's like, podcasting is one of those things where the return on investment is like so valuable just because of the people that I meet. And I feel like those kinds of interactions are much more valuable than the majority of interactions that I have with people on Twitter or Instagram or wherever. It's like, even though we're talking virtually, just doing something like this is immensely more valuable because I can read someone's emotions to a certain degree. I don't know what y'all are doing under the table, but it's just so much more tangible in that sense. Whereas like just looking at someone's tweet and reading their text or reading their emojis, there's so much room for misinterpretation. And I feel like that misinterpretation, we were talking earlier a bit about like ambiguity. There's way too much fucking ambiguity in there, and you're just misreading things all the time, and it creates more anxiety because you don't fully understand exactly what that person was trying to say. You're just trying to interpret it. And that's why Twitter is like such a cesspool sometimes, especially in certain circles, politics, I'm looking at you, where it's just people berating each other based on a lot of misunderstandings. And so it's like, at that point, what the fuck are you doing there? Just like walk away, put your phone down, because you're just wasting time virtually arguing with somebody over something that has little to no value on your actual real life. Chelsea, do you want to talk on all this, like mental health, social media, et cetera?
Yeah, definitely. I'm noticing a pattern where everyone is just kind of slowly, if they can, leaving social media. I think the key word has definitely been boundaries, and figuring out what your boundaries are, and just realizing like that they will shift at any given moment. That was something that I sort of realized, you know, during my debut year, but even afterwards, it was sort of like, oh, well, I'm working on this sequel now. I'm trying to carve out some personal space to work on it. And being online is really exciting because I, you know, get to see all the wonderful things that I'm posted in. But at the same time, it's also kind of stressing me out because people are talking about how excited they are for my second book, but it's really slow going. And like, that stresses me out. And so like, you know, like we were talking about ambiguity, but I think also there's a sense of even when you're getting positive feedback, that could be stressful in a different way. And, you know, like my brain is kind of always split into two different perspectives. There's the perspective of like, oh, wow, like, you know, this comment means so much to me. And like, I'm very glad that this person reached out to me and shared this with me. And then, you know, on the flip side, it's like, oh, but this is how this personally impacts me. And what can I do to stress myself out less? And so I think that's where the boundaries come into play. And I think for me, especially in 2023, because 2023 ended up being a very quiet year for me creatively. ended up being quiet in the sense that I didn't have a book coming out last year. So there wasn't really much for me to promote as an author. I wasn't really posting much online and didn't really feel like I had anything to post. So I was kind of offline for that reason. But then also I had a lot of personal stuff going on in my life that made it really hard to juggle being online. I think there's a lot of emotional energy you invest into the online sphere, regardless of the kinds of correspondences and exchanges you're having with people. There's always some kind of emotional energy that goes into it. And I think maybe like some people are a lot better at this than I am. And I have like a lot of like serious respect for people who are in the indie sphere who are, you know, like really who know how to use that online, those online connections and, you know, really get their book out there because I am not good at that. I am all about memes. I just post memes and fun things about my book. But then that's also another thing sort of my relationship with social has always been like leading up to debut or even before debut, before I got an agent, before any of that, I was just existing as a writer on the writer sphere who wanted to meet other writers. And so for me, I met a lot of friends on Twitter and still have those friends. It's, you know, really incredible. They're some of my best friends. And so I use social media in that sense. And then when I, you know, that lead up to publishing, when I had to start promoting my book, it was hard to think of content that was specific to promotion. I think because again, like I have that sort of that weird thing in my head where I'm like, but I don't think of my book as a product. So like, how am I supposed to put it out there like that?
And how do you kind of balance that weird divide between like how personal is this or like how like pushy is this in terms of, does it feel like my feed is just like pure marketing stuff?
Exactly. And I think for me, I mean, like a lot of my, I like hesitate to call it a strategy even because it, you know, I didn't really think about it like this. But I think, you know, something that I did online and that I, you know, still do is whenever I'm posting something, it's usually like some kind of anecdote related to my book or something that I personally enjoy and I'm excited about. I really love to post snippets of my writing. I cannot do that or was not able to do that last year just because my drafts are in flux for a very long time because I am a slow burn writer. Things tend to change up until the book is in copy edits. So when I can, I love to share like little teasers and stuff of my writing. But again, because last year was such a quiet year for me and I didn't really have much to share and I was dealing with life, I sort of put up boundaries and just time constraints on social. Another thing that I've been focusing on too, and something that I struggled with, especially after debut, is this, you know, when you're debuting, I think so much of your world revolves around your debut. You're very excited for it. All of the notifications that you're getting, a lot of the correspondences that you're having with people, they're all about your book. And so like the book kind of becomes the center of your life. And then I kind of had to pivot away from that after debut and like remind myself, you have a whole life outside of this book. And that life is more important than the book. And so I think for me, because social media is tied to my book, You know, I don't, my personal life is very separate from social media. You know, making that, like, sort of separating myself from social media was very helpful for trying to, like, for that reminder, for reminding myself, focus on your life first. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the book will come when the book comes. So that has been an ongoing journey for me. And I think, like, in 2023, especially, just because of everything that was going on in my life, I was not online very much. I will be online more this year, hopefully, given the progress on the book and, you know, everything that's coming up for me with the sequel, mm-hmm. hopefully soonish. but yeah, no, I think just reminding oneself that, like, you know, to put up the boundaries when they're necessary, and also that the boundaries themselves are constantly shifting, mm-hmm. is very important. And it's something that I continue to try to get better at.
Yeah. And it's like, even if you have to go from one sort of, like, sphere of normalcy or attention, it's like, this is my debut. And even if you have to go through withdrawal, just fucking put up with it. Just, like, let the shakes happen and get back to the real world and understand that, like, you know, we all have lives outside of these books, and it is cool to be a debut author, and it is amazing to have a book out in the world, but we're all people. We have kids, we have partners, we have friends, we have hobbies and things that we want to do outside of this. So it is kind of hard to detach yourself from the identity that you build around of you as an author. But then it's like, no, I'm also me as a dad. I'm also me as a podcaster. I'm me as a friend. I'm me as all these different roles. And you kind of have to find the right balance between those different things. I want to pass it to each of you. If you can just quickly tell everyone what you think one of the biggest misconceptions, trad people, you can say something about trad, Caden and I can speak to self-publishing. One of the biggest misconceptions about launching a book and being a debut author. So Emma, we'll go to you first.
I've been really thoughtful about, like, the way we're like breaking down social media. Like, I have a lot of skepticism about it, in part because I wrote a psychology master's on it. but, and you know, the tendency of in groups to devolve into, like, destroying each other, where the call is coming from inside the house versus, like, trolls coming from outside to actually do damage, where, like, within an in-group on social media, it can become very toxic and corrosive. And but so that's shaped a lot of my skepticism and a lot of my approach to it. But yeah, I would say that the misconception I would want people to take home about trad stuff is, like, there's really, like, so little that you as an author in trad can do to move the needle. And honestly, that's why I went to trad. I don't have the stamina and the energy and the drive it takes to do self-publishing. I know that about me. It's just not, I don't have that. So I immensely respect the ability to do it, but understanding it's not my deal meant, mm-hmm. I guess it's trad or nothing for me. And I went to trad and I still got suckered into thinking maybe I should, though. And that was a mistake. And you shouldn't make it. If you don't like it, don't do it. There are only two places I enjoy being online in any sort of social media sense. And it is Blue Sky and it is Tumblr, because they are not very good at moving the needle. They are just for socializing. That's all they do. And I like being goofy there. That's what I want and that's what I get. But the way that, if you are trying to be on there to move things and it starts getting into your life where you, like, have those experiences in your personal life and you start thinking, that's an anecdote I could share, I personally hate it. I can't do it. It's, again, panopticon shit. It's not for mm-hmm. me. If you're trad and you don't like it, don't do it. Holly Black told me that at Comic-Con, and it was really refreshing to hear mm-hmm. because it's true.
Yeah. Bo Kelly says that Blue Sky feels like a high school lunchroom. lots of clicks, not talking to each other, but not real mass appeal. So that's perfect.
100%
if you want the click, hit up Blue Sky. It's what it's all about, man.
Yeah, it's fun. It's just gossip and that and being silly. And that's why I like it.
Scott, what about you? One of the big misconceptions that you see based on your experiences and what you've heard from other authors?
Yeah, I mean, I really just think I'd have to echo what everybody else is saying, right? Like, they're in trad, there's not a lot you're going to do, so don't sweat it too much. I mean, I take that back. There are things you can do, in my opinion, in terms of writing the right book and finding the right agent, finding the right editor, etc. There are certainly things you can do. But once that book is coming out, you're either going to make it or you're not. And so just accept it.
Ride the wave. Ride the wave, baby.
Indeed.
Awesome. And Caden, do you want to touch on self-publishing in terms of misconceptions that you've seen based on your experience or what you've seen through others? You're on mute. Got to unmute yourself, bud. Dr. Love, get it together.
There we go. Okay. I think a lot of it is just you learn it as you get closer to the book release, but don't expect everything to change. Like, you know, grass always greener. It's not going to all change when you get your book out. Everything is very gradual. And I think that's when I'm asked by people that are trying to get into the publishing sphere, especially self-publishing, you've got to put yourself out there. You've got to start laying that groundwork. And Twitter was the one where it really clicked. I, for the longest time, really considered getting on Twitter because I was mainly just on Instagram, and I've since moved to Twitter and TikTok, and just find people that will kind of help you along. And I think that is one of the best things, that don't expect to go all alone, but also you have to put in the work. You've got to, you're your marketing team, you're the company, you got to do it. And I mean, just don't be afraid to ask for help, but you got to work. It's a whole part of the job.
Yeah. And I think another thing building on that, it's like, you have to work hard, but you also have to understand that like Chelsea, self-publishing is a slow burn, and nobody is going to be successful right off the bat. No one's going to hit it huge with their first book. Like, I've talked to Ryan Cahill about this, and he's a good friend and has been very public about the fact that like he didn't explode until like, I think it was book two or three, you know? So it's like, you can't expect that first book to just be a boom, like coming out of the gate, everyone's fucking buying it, everyone's clamoring for it, everyone's talking about you, et cetera, et cetera. No, it's a slow burn, and you have to be patient and consistent and allow the momentum to build gradually based on your hard work and your engagement. And yeah, that's just the nature of self-publishing. It's like, you do have to be engaged a lot and consistently, or people will likely forget about you. And in trad, there's also the possibility that readers will forget about you. But I think the traditional publishing machine, it varies from publisher to publisher, but they have a better capability to keep you within the sort of within the discussion and within the sort of perception of SFF readers. And the fact that your book is on a bookshelf and someone goes to a bookstore, and there's that connection as well. Whereas self-publishing, it's like you are consumed by the Amazon machine and the algorithm and all these different kinds of things. And so it's like, there's much more of a consistent work ethic that has to be applied for you to remain visible, whether it's through your social media, whether it's the way that you advertise, whether it's the consistency through which you release books, you know, like the crazy people who write like 3, 4, 5, 6 books a year. I can't even imagine that, but some people do it, you know. Some people manage one book a year, some people manage two, some people release a book every 2 years. It just depends on your personal preference and how much you want to work at it and engage. But self-publishing is a slow burn. Chelsea, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm probably just going to be echoing what is already said. But yeah, I think, well, let me try. I'll come at it from a different angle.
Okay.
So I think one of the misconceptions just in general about debut, or one of the expectations, is that if you don't make or break your debut, like if you don't hit it big, then like that's the end, because debut is such a splashy word. And, you know, I think whenever you're debuting in any age category, but maybe especially in SFF, debut is thrown around a lot. So like if your debut doesn't meet your expectations, or if it's not everything that you've dreamed of, it's not the end of the world. Like debut is literally just the beginning. And, you know, you were talking a lot about slow burn. And I think, you know, especially in the case of a series, you know, the more you publish, the more people are going to pick up your book. So I feel like that's especially, applicable to series, but just in general, I think the more of a backlist you have as an author, the more chances people have to find out who you are. Mm-hmm. And then it's really exciting when you start to build a backlist, because then people have other books that they can go and seek out from you. I say this as if I have more than one book out.
No, this is your hope. This is you just like projecting into the future.
This is me manifesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Manifest your destiny, Chelsea.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that is probably, you know, people put a lot of pressure on themselves for debuting, but also just in general, there's this, you know, this idea of, oh, well, you know, debut is when you have to make your big splash. And sometimes you do, and it's like really fantastic. I had a really wonderful debut and I'm, you know, very, very grateful for it. But I'm also very much looking into the future. And, you know, just thinking about the long term. I think people get very, very hung up on the short term, and it can be very easy to be hung up on the short term during debut, mm-hmm. because you are so honed in on that moment. But ultimately, it's a marathon, not a race.
Chelsea's all about the slow burn. That's what it's
the only thing I can do.
770,000 fucking words.
Never again.
All right, Sonya, close us out.
I think if I'd had to go first, I probably would have said the same thing as him and Scott and Chelsea. But I guess I'll try for a different angle, which is I think there's a misconception that publishers don't have a lot of money, or that there's not a lot of money to be made. And I do think, like in some cases, budgets are tight, but there's what I would say is that there's more money than you might think. That one of the things that stood out to me from the past year from the authors we've talked to is there are quite a few people making a decent living at publishing, mm-hmm. who I didn't realize were making a decent living, because they're not, you know, they're not necessarily very online. They're not necessarily very flashy about it. They're handing in the books and they get decent contracts and they get reasonable sales and they stuck at it long enough and they pull in an income. And the reason I guess I want to highlight that is I do actually think it is in publisher interests for authors to continue to believe that they don't have a lot of money and that there's not enough money to go around. Mm. Because if authors believe that, they don't expect any better. And it kind of creates this culture of like, well, there's no money. That's how it is. You do it for love. And it's like, well, you do it for love, but there is money to go around and it doesn't all have to go to shareholders, right? Fantasy is exploded by what, like a hundred... Samantha Shannon's books alone, she had 169% increase in sales, you know, this past year. Wow. Or something. It was insane, right? Like sci-fi and fantasies, it went up like 23-20% something in the past few years. It is, you know, the sales are there, the money is there. It's hard, but you can make a living and you can expect your publisher to pay you well. You can't force them to, but they should be, and they've definitely got it. So I think just changing our ideas again about what's possible and what publishers say is possible is mm-hmm. helpful long term, maybe.
Yeah, and from the self-pub side, someone was asking earlier about like how much self-pub authors have to invest, and that is very flexible in terms of what you yourself are capable of as an author. You know, like for me personally, I have not invested that much in my debut novel because I paid for the cover art and paying for the editing, but the design I did myself because I have a background in graphic design, and all the promotional material that I've done, I did that as well. And so there are, and like the interior design for the book, I have experience in that as well. So it's like, I've been able to apply these different skills, and therefore I've been able to, you know, basically spend less than $2,500 on my debut. Whereas there are other authors who might spend up to $10,000, you know? So it's very much dependent on what you feel is necessary for you as an author, based on your skill set, based on how you have to delegate certain aspects of your book's creation. And don't just go into it expecting, oh, well, fuck, I'm going to be out 10 grand. Because you don't know that. You have to research and figure out what you are capable of doing and who you might have to get to help you out along the way. And from there, you can come up with a reasonable estimate. Or like in Caden's case, you know, think about Kickstarters and different ways that you can incorporate crowdfunding into your release and whatnot. So it is very flexible, but you have to do the research. And I just have to throw this comment from my friend Eleni up there. And then they go and give a random influencer a 7K cruise ship trip to promote a book. Because publishers know how to invest their money in the right things, don't they? So there are a lot of misconceptions out there. I think people just have to find the resources to, you know, listen to Sunny and Scott's podcast to have like a reasonable, probably jaded perception of what traditional publishing might be like for you, or, you know, look up resources for self-publishing and understand these are the things that I need to do. This is extraneous. What can I do myself versus who can I ask to help, whether it's friends or people you know have the right skill sets. I think there's just a lot of resources out there now for people to enter into the SFF space as debut authors, and nobody has any excuse to say, you know, I went into this completely blind. There are way too many resources. You just have to be diligent about doing your research and putting in the time to ask the right people, like ask authors things too, listen to their podcasts, read the articles that they've written. Like Travis Baldry put out an excellent article on self-publishing on Medium, I believe. So it's like, you can find stuff like that, these little gems, and you don't have to go into this thing blind. Being a debut author seems, like Chelsea said, like this grandiose fucking thing, but you have to go into it with open eyes. Otherwise, your expectations are going to be shattered and your hopes are going to be, you know, diminished by the things that surprised you and scared you. So I don't think anybody has to fear being a debut author. Just go into it with your eyes open and your head clear, and know that if you have an awesome book, you can put it out there and readers are going to love it. So I will close it out by asking each of you for a recommendation. If you can give me one debut novel that you absolutely adore, and tell everyone where they can find you on the beloved social media platforms. So, Sunya?
So a novel I actually finished the other week was Leech by Hiren Innes. I think I've said Hiren's name right. And that's a novel I sort of avoided for a long time because I thought I might like it. When I think I might like a novel, I avoid them out of a panic that I won't and I'll be sad. But it was absolutely amazing. I love what they did with that story and that premise. And it's very weird and very cool. There's not a lot of books out there with a main character who's a single organism with multiple bodies. So if 90s new weird is your jam, there's a lot on offer there. Yeah. And where you can find me generally, my website is probably the best place these days. I have Facebook, but it's mostly full of like memes, and I use Instagram, and that's about it. So.
And go pick up The Book Eaters. Fantastic, fantastic book.
Thank you.
And Scott?
The Book Eaters is a fantastic book. Mm-hmm. And I am not a mom, but I loved it. It's not a mom.
You're a dad. You're like mom adjacent.
I spend a ton of time with my kids. Yeah. I'll call out another as well. A debut I read recently called The Last Line by Stephen Ronson. I actually think it's only available in the UK right now in physical edition, though I ordered a copy from Blackwell, so they do ship to the US, and Kindle and audiobooks available in the US. But it's a really fun World War II thriller about a guy who is a World War I vet and is recruited to be part of the defense force. I don't know what the hell they called it. Probably something really interesting, being the UK, for a potential invasion at the beginning of World War II. And he has to investigate a murder of a local girl. I thought it was quite well done.
Awesome. And where can people find you?
Yeah, I mean, if you're watching this, you probably already know. I'm on Twitter, got a podcast. You can probably find my email if you try hard enough.
Go buy The Rise of the Mages. Go support Scott's work.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
And Dr. Love?
Sorry, take me a minute to find the unmute button. But I mean, it's not a super old debut. It's been a couple of years, but if you like follow me on social media, you know how much I hype Zach Argyle's Threadlight trilogy. Voice of War is like, it's one of the books that really impacted me to recognize how great indie fantasy can be. Because I think that a lot of people, before they really get into the world, had the misconception that like, oh, self-published books are because you can't get published. But no, there's so many great things out there. And that one was just so cool. I love the themes you have, you know, strong married couple themes of, you know, they have a young child, which isn't in my life yet, but it's definitely something that's on my mind. I mean, I'm a recently young married guy. So I don't know. It really was riveting for me, and it showed me it gave me a vision of what I thought I could do in the future. So that's one that I'll never stop recommending. And you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. My username is Caden Love Author, spelled like you see right there.
But with the word author. Caden's debut, which is up today, Elegy of a Fragmented Vineyard. Go support him. Yep. Go pick that up. Is the Kickstarter still open or is that closed already?
It closed. And I just sent all the ebooks out to everyone, but it finished with like 115 backers. So
Bravo, sir. Bravo.
Thank you.
Emma, what about you?
So I've already outed that I can be found. Oh, wait. First, recommendation. So this book came out like a month before mine, but we're actually editor siblings. And when it wasn't on my radar at all. And then the first chapter went up like 5 months before it came out, and I was instantly obsessed. Mm-hmm. I think the writing is just absolutely incredible. It's a little difficult to describe, but it's The Saint of Bright Doors by Vajra Chandrasekhara. It's technically about a boy who's raised to assassinate his father, who's a saint, except then from that first chapter, it moves into the future where he's part of a support group for former chosen ones in this city full of refugees from other sorts of strange, fantastical places. And like the city is littered with doors that are simply not really understood. They're definitely strange. They're definitely studied, but their meaning and what's behind them is still unknown. And I pivot people toward this book all the time because the writing is incredible and the world building is incredible because it's so comfortable with making the mundanity of being alive and interacting with people something really intense and interesting and meaty and rich. And I love it to death. Go read The Saint of Bright Doors. Everybody should delight in it.
Nice. I've been meaning to pick that one up.
Oh, do it, do it, do it. Do it for me.
I will do it for you, Emma.
And oh, go, right. Social media. Yeah, I can be found on social media technically in most places because I'm either like there or sitting on my name. And I'm either Emma Candon or E.M. Candon.
And go by The Archive Undying or Star Wars Visions Ronin if you're in the mood for some feudal Japan-inspired Star Wars with awesome fights and like really cool folklore and stuff like that. And Chelsea?
So if we are recommending debuts, I will have to shout out Camilla Cole's So Let Them Burn. I had the pleasure of doing her launch event last week. It's a really phenomenal YA fantasy debut, features dragons, sisters, and just... the whole plot sort of, you know, it focuses on these two sisters who are, who get swept into this conflict involving these dragons from another empire. And it really focuses on their relationship, familial relationships. It's all just really fantastic, and I can't recommend it enough. Nice. So that just came out last week. So it is now available in stores. In terms of my social media, so I am Chels Abdullah. I do technically exist on Twitter and Threads, but I don't frequently post there. So most likely Instagram is the best place to reach me. Otherwise, I have a website, chelseaabdullah.com. You can also sign up for my newsletter there, which I will finally send out a newsletter this month. This is one of my 2024 goals is to start sending out newsletters.
You keep everyone hanging.
Yes, I just need news, you know? So much of publishing is waiting and, you know, wondering when you're going to receive news and dates and all of that. So I am very excited to be talking about that this year.
Awesome. And The Stardust Thief is available now. Go check that out. Fantastic book. And I'm just going to throw out two recommendations. I spoke to them last night in the science fantasy panel, but my friends Aparna Verma and Alexander Darwin, their books, The Phoenix King and Combat Codes, are fantastic. Both very different in their own unique ways. One is a lot about fighting. The other one is like slow burn, enemies to lovers romance with fire magic and cool tech and all that kind of stuff. But both of them are excellent. But Sunyi, Scott, Chelsea, Emma, and Caden, thank you so much for delving into the nitty-gritty of the debut author experience with me. I really appreciate it. And I hope everyone enjoys the rest of TBRCon 2024 week. Thank you all for watching. And I hope all the debut authors there, or the aspiring debut authors, the authors in the making, got some hope out of this emotional panel. But I really appreciate you all doing this, and thank you so much.